Apparently, this must be the case of the different planets that our guys would have visited. While they thought at the beginning that the men of the Earth were all speaking the same language, horribly complicated. Seeing the pictures brought back by our probes, we were very amazed to discover that the skin of people seemed to vary from a region to another. We supposed that the people of the Earth covered their skin with pigments in a ritual way, or to protect themselves from some diseases. Later we discovered with stupefaction that a set of ethnic groups were cohabitating, each one owning a peculiar language. We immediately thought that this would simplify our infiltration in the terrestrial social net, without having assimilated the languages and the customs, pretending to be from foreign country. Rather quickly, the computer gave us the first linguistic elements allowing to decode the language of the local inhabitants. Walking some 100 meters away from our refuge, we discovered a heap of stools, surrounded by some animal which flew away as we came. Laying on a printed piece of paper, that we brought back in our underground. We tried to decode the ideograms which were printed on this document. Today this object, which is the first we discovered on Earth, is on Amo, where it has been conserved with special techniques to freeze with care the parts with different temperatures, depending from the material. One of us suggested that this could correspond to a ritual action of someone who wanted to show his reprobation against this written document. A photography on the document showed the way the people were clothed. Helped with these informations, we sewed some synthetic clothes, copying the picture. We had no idea what button could be used for, and we pictures them with clear flakes. Fitted with this approximative disguisement, we ventured far from our refuge, but we realized rapidly that our clothes were anachronics and we went back precipitately in our underground. This is a chance we have not been detected with such outfits. As a matter of fact, the picture was related to a theater play which has been given in the capital. The first human being we met was a young shepherd, named Pierre, aged then of 11 and, which was warding some unknown mammals with horns. He was in a widow, slightly in the lower down. As we had the sun in the back, he used his hand as protection. We thought this was a salutation sign and we did the same gestures. The young shepherd saluted us in a shy way and went away with his herd. Worried by this meeting, we decided to go back in our refuge and we placed some defense and monitoring devices in the surroundings. But nothing moved during 3 days. Le Child came back the day after, amazed of this encounter with people with tight clothes, and he was deceived not to meet them again. We observed him from our refuge. We dared no going out. The 24th of April we made a house breaking on a farm of the neighborhood. We anesthetized its inhabitants, a couple, their 3 children and some Spanish workers, the dog which began to bark. Then we penetrated in the building and gathered quickly some samples. Have been taken away, some clothes, identity cards from which we could make very good falsifications, some pencils, and hygrometer representing the Blessed Virgin, keys, stamps, a groups of letters and unpaid bills, books about the breeding of cows, the notice of a tractor, a children encyclopedia, a roll of hygienic paper, a clock, some bulbs. The electric light meter that we removed from the wall where it was fixed, some switches, drugged, 6 pairs of shoes, a radio, the school bag of one of the children, a bottle of lemon juice, 2 potatoes, a wall calendar, a soap, a cutter and an oil burner, and all the money we could find, 70,000 French francs. One may imagine the stupefaction of the farmers after the raid operated by the Amits in their home. My friend Jean-Jacques Pasteur, living in Din, what facilitated our researches in the region. After nosing about everywhere, we had some information from a hairdresser who told him about this strange story. He remembered having seen the members of a family of the surroundings, the Violet, who went down once to the village to deposit a strange complaint to the police office. Arriving there, they were all bare feet. Jean-Jacques was quite amazed while the coiffeur, remembering the sayings of the family chief, gave practically the whole list of stolen objects written in the Amits document. The Violet believed then to have been robbed by fools. One may read in the Amit texts that they would have taken some samples of diverses secretions on the sleeping bodies, spittle, sweat, and some genital secretions. According to the texts, the olfaction would play an important role for them. Out of humans, they would have olfactive capacities as accurate as the one of a dog. This means they may recognize thousands of different smells. This sense would play an essential function in the identification on another person, much more than vision. So, landing on an unknown planet, their first worry would have been to prepare some perfumes imitating the human odors, in order not to be detected by the men of the Earth, thinking they would have the same capability on this point. If the Amits were really as they describe themselves, and if they were correctly clothed, they could enter any public place without being noticed by the Terrians. On the contrary, a dog could not be fooled and would begin to bark furiously against these beings looking like humans but having a completely different smell. Jean-Jacques found quite quickly the farm of the Violet. There was still the tractor, made in Spain, in the shed, from which the Amits said to have stolen some parts. We tried, of course, to talk with the farmers, without success. In this region of mountains, people are generally not very chatty. Moreover, the Amits said to have indemnified them in 1952. A very good reason to say nothing. Completing the story, the Father Violet, dead today, would have built, near Aix-en-Provence, a superb villa. Detail: the balconies were plastered of stars in forged iron. After this first operation, the Amits concluded, this allowed us to get information of the clothing and to prepare some more credible garments. We could then take contact with the young Sephard, which took us for foreigners. Our linguistic knowledge could grow very quickly. The child never talked of this encounter to his father, afraid that he would forbid him to speak again with these unknown people. Who are these Amits? We read on from the Amo research, done by the French scientist J.P. Petty. Now we look at history of Amo, and the production system on Amo, and the sexual life on Amo. We are obliged to read cautiously what the texts say on the inhabitants of this planet, about their customs, their history. All that pass the best texts of science fiction authors. I received since 1990, numerous letters coming from different places in the world. They were fitted with a finger stamp, as the letters received by the Spaniards. The Amits wear this stamp on their finger, wet it with ink, and press their mark on the sheet. Here is, for example, what was figured on one of the letters I received. The letter is dictated. They do not write themselves, but uses the services of terrestrial stenotypists, paid by them. The signature stamp is, as they say, the symbol of their planet. Here is the general aspect of a Amit vessel, as described in the documents of 1967, completed by the reports received in 1993. The cross-section of the vessel would be of 13 meters and a half. When landing, some retractable feet would get out from the side, fitted with large feet to avoid them to dive into a too loose floor. This landing gear, which would have left the prints photographed in San José de Valdres seen previously. Figure 28, the Amit vessel. The passengers get out through a trap door, visible on the bottom side. The upper dome would not be the deck but would contain the energy source, an appreciable quantity of antimatter, in electromagnetic levitation state. Figure 30, during the flight in the atmosphere, the Tixian tropic jelly fills the habitacle. It would maintain the passengers and would allow to resist to accelerations of 50 grams. During the flight in the air, the vessel would produce a strong pulsed magnetic field. As it could produce some unwished effects on the body of the passengers, a hull made of a superconducting material would screen it perfectly. A superconductive hull is tied to variable magnetic field. All the sensitive components of the vessel would be then protected this way. The vessel would contain no electronic which would be perturbed by these variable fields. The information would be transmitted through different way, including optical fibers described in the texts of 1967. During the whole interstellar cruise, which would take place in the Twin Universe, the passengers would benefit from artificial gravity created by a slow rotation of their toroidal habitacle. The effects of the Coriolis force on their inner ear, similar to ours, would be cleared by an implant. Figure 31 configuration of the vessel during the cruising in the Twin Universe. The traveling time on Earth would be in average 3 months. But the Ummits said to have traveled once 2 years long. The life function of the passengers would be then completely managed by some sort of diving suit, ultra sophisticated. The helmet would be fitted with a large screen, on which would be printed some 3D pictures, with a very high definition. The eye could not see the difference between these pictures and reality. The passengers would benefit of a whole environment which evokes our modern concepts of virtual reality. Let me remind you, by the way, that all these texts are from 1967. The fact that the light speed is higher in the Twin Universe would allow a large reduction of the voyage time. But some extra cosmological oscillations would act on the ratio of the light speed in our universe to the one in the Twin Universe, which is a phenomena we try to write mathematically today. They would lengthen or shorten the traveling time. Some particularly good condition would have allowed the Ummits to achieve travels to a distance of 2,000 light-years. A quite pronounced hyperspatial folding in 1947 would have, as they say, caused a large flow of extraterrestrial visitors on Earth, some coming from distances of 400 light-years. Such hyperspatial foldings would be relatively rare. Their period would be measured in centuries. Generally, this phenomena would regulate the UFO waves. The Ummits speak of ethnic groups which came to visit us. In 1947, some visitors, with small size and a big head, would have been responsible of 80% of the sighting at this period. These people would have stayed 4 years on Earth. Then, their curiosity satisfied, they would have gone quietly home, completely disinterested of the Earth and its inhabitant. If we believe the Ummits, the extraterrestrial ethnic groups would know more or less each other's. Some would collaborate, some others would avoid each other. The Ummits would have no, in their history, before joining the club themselves, their own UFOs. The reports precise that when the expeditionaries would have visited the Earth, they would have been inspected by a vessel, apparently fitted with a higher technology. Worried, they would have preferred to escape in the Twin Universe, flying to a relativistic speed. The Earth would be, according to the Ummits, the observation and experimentation field for numerous ethnic groups, which would have settled in refuges in different regions, as themselves, and particularly in the North American continent, while very advanced technologically. Three extraterrestrial type would be enough similar to us so that they can with no risks mix with the local populations. The others would be too different and would be immediately detected. The MHD would be used for propulsion in the atmosphere. When the vessels would fly stationary near the ground, another device would be activated which would avoid a blow effect. As we saw, the matter of the Twin Universe would behave as a repulsive matter to ours. The vessels would be fitted of a device allowing their transfer in the Twin Universe. The Ummits, in a report of 1993, gave some details on this technique, but it would require some quite sophisticated theoretical physics concepts to explain it here. So, for the way the vessel is moving and guiding during its voyage in the Twin Universe. But in short, when the vessel swaps into the other universe, it would still be sensitive to the presence of Earth, which became invisible for it. The Earth would then become repulsive. The weight of the vessel would be inverted. By interleaving its staying in both universes, the vessel would be submitted to an interleaving of attraction and repulsion, with a fast rhythm. These two effects would compensate each other and the vehicle would be in a state of anti-gravity. The schemes of the figures 32, 33 and 34 illustrate this concept. Figure 33, the vessel disappears in the Twin Universe. It becomes invisible for a terrestrial observer and is pushed away by the planet with a force mg. Figure 34, same situation seen from the Twin Universe. The Earth is here invisible, but its repulsive action is still in action. The microtechnology of the Ummits. The Ummit technology is entirely miniaturized texts of 1967. These technologies are, on Earth, at a starting point, if one accepts the microinformatics components which replace the classical lamps. The side of the vessel would constitute a very complex set of elements which could contain to 4,000 components per cubic millimeters. Its external face would be plastered with all sorts of captors, which record all sorts of information in a large frequency band. This structure would also be able to repair itself. The maintenance would be performed automatically. During the flights in both universes, some micrometeorites may injure the wall elements. When a damage is noticed by the central computer, the ZAMU-3, this one would order the transport of a new element, toward the injured part, of a spare part. This part would be enveloped with a protecting jelly, transported through little channels, and placed automatically. All technologies on Earth are inspired from the living world. Our clothes are artificial skins. Our knife is a tooth and our glasses are additive crystalline lenses. In the same way, our computers execute, in place of our brains, some subordinate tasks. The progresses of robotics are the evident extension of this irreversible process. The production system on Ummo. The industry of this hypothetical Ummo planet is absolutely fascinating. The authors of the documents pretend to have completely solved the problem of energy production, by direct synthesis of antimatter. This basic energy would then be stored in production units. When one wants to produce any type of object, including something so complex as a vessel, no component would be assembled with hands. The Ummits pretend that their computers have quite huge storage capacities, not conceivable by us. The memories of these computers would be Titan crystals, absolutely pure, cooled at the absolute zero. The information would be stored at the atomic level, through the excitation of the electronic layers of the atoms. To such a low temperature, these excited states have an infinite lifetime. The plans of any machine or device could so be stored as a reduced volume. Let's notice that our storage capacities today would have been not thinkable by the contemporaneous of Gutenberg. The machines would be assembled atom after atom, molecules per molecules, those being synthesized through transmutation of any basic material. Let us think at the way the Ummits have synthesized in situ the alloy for the arches of the refuge. They could copy any object, with a precision at the level of the atom. On Earth, we use photocopy machines. When you introduce a sheet of paper in the machine, you get perfect copy of your document. What would stupefied a man of the Renaissance is now everyday action. We already have three-dimensional printers. These are tanks filled with a light-hardened liquid. When its level goes up, step by step, a laser solidified this liquid layer after layer. At the end of the operation, we obtain a hard copy of the object, in three dimensions. We also can analyze the geometry of an object with the help of the ultrasound scanner. Coupling both devices, we may realize the copy of an object. But the copy is not identical to the original. It only has the same form, but is made of plastic. The scanners evoked in the Ummits texts could analyze the structure of an object, atom per atom, and make a perfect copy, with the same principle, but at the atomic scale. The authors said that they copied so lots of work of ats they would have lent, and would put them back then. Most of the time these objects would have been archaeological objects we would not have discovered yet. The Ummits pretend to be exceptional archaeologists. This set of techniques would have made disappeared, on their planet, the concept of work, and even the needs of energy, of raw materials and then pollution. The waste are transmuted into gas, as for instance helium. All that is quite logic and seems to be our technological future, if we can reach in time our auto-regulation. The evolution of techniques of the planet Ummo. The Ummits texts contain some important historical information. The Ummit history would have been as violent as our, even worse. This species would be hemeralopic. The primitive Ummits would have lived in underground galleries, like moles, going out at night and sleeping during the day. Their planet would be, during the day, so windy that it would not have been possible to build real roads. They would have been too often choked with sand. If we suppose that when arriving on Earth, these hypothetical expeditionaries would have already known the living condition of others' neighbor planets, we are maybe the only diurnal species in the thousands light-year around. The documents, when they refer to their entry in the terrestrial atmosphere, said they would have taken our roads and railways for channels. In other reports they say they never built real roads. So, how did they travel before being masters of the interatmospheric flight? Their technology would have taken since the beginning, they admit, a resolutely zoomorphic direction. At the first glance this machine seems quite funny. But when one look nearer, this system with artificial knees is quite astute. If its equilibrium could be perfectly controlled, this engine seems to be well adapted to a locomotion on all types of grounds, with a non-negligible speed. The texts indicate also that their communication ways would be adapted to this type of locomotion and then fundamentally different of our roads. The Ummits would have only stabilized the ground by injecting different components and by covering the surface with and gripping coating, without modifying the geometry of the floor. All this net of tracks would progressively disfigure the planet and its inhabitants would have decided to suppress it by digging a complex net of underground tubes for raw materials. The ground on Ummo would be today stuffed with canalizations dealing for the transport of raw materials and end products. The factories, the field and the orchards would be underground. This is quite logic if the climate is so hard windy, low temperatures. The Ummits seem to be ecologists to the backbone. The surface of the planet would have been strongly remodeled. The climate regions located far from the coast would have ameliorated with a watering complex and reforested. Some artificial rivers would have been dug. The animal species would have been systematically protected. The text adds, we cite, the human could then get rid of one of the worst blemish which impede its cultural progress. His distance to nature. The housing and the everyday's life on Ummo. The house described in the Ummits texts appears essentially functional. Believing the illustrations joined to the documents, they would have an ellipsoidal shape, quite flat, fixed on some sort of peduncle. In short, their houses look like mushrooms. The buildings would be coded with colors, depending of their function. Their aerodynamic shape would allow them to resist too wind coming from all directions. Figure 36, the modern Ummit habitations. The visible cupola of the top part would have a particular function. This would be a domestic television, which would produce some 3D color pictures on a semi-spherical screen with very high definition. This habitation would be able to retract itself in a cavity of the floor. The peduncle on which it is fixed looks like our old elevators. The house could also turn on itself. When going into the ground, the Ummits would then close their curtains. This retracting allows also to the habitation to escape to hard weather conditions. The rotation would get the sand off the roof of the house, to evacuate all materials brought by the terrible storms of the planet coming from pressure gradients much more important than on Earth. The rooms inside would have no doors. The Ummit would be fundamentally gregarious, would absolutely no suffer of the promiscuity, no more in his habitation than in its vessels where 12 passengers oppressed like pilchards in a can. In the houses, some anti-noise devices, which would create some sonic waves in phase opposition with the origin sound. This allows to make the silence in some rooms. In the illustrations one see empty rooms. Figure 37, the architecture of the Ummits habitations. The texts precise that no room has a particular functions and that all may be transformed indifferently into a dining room or into a bedroom. So, at lunchtime, some trapdoors in the floor go on, which allows the inhabitants to sit down. A matter would be pulverized on the floor, transformed into a table. On Ummo, one would eat on the floor. Figure 38, Ummit during lunchtime. We see on this picture a man drinking a liquid food through a pipe connected to a device remaining the Oriental Nargile. The foods would be calculated on Amo to bring all the necessary. The Amits appear more nutritionists than Himes. About the taste, they say that the Japanese cookery would be very near theirs. One would concentrate before eating, in silence, focusing on the good assimilation of the food. This belongs to the living rules allowing to escape to health problems. The texts precise that we underestimate considerably this aspect in the nutritional activities. The glass, the fork and the knife would not be used on Ummo. The guests would disinfect their hands with a quite special washstand which would cover them with a thin film and allow to eat without being directly in contact with the food. In short, they would eat with gloves, which would be dissolved after the meal. The foods like meat would be cut with a sharp electromagnetic ray, strong enough, and focused to cut the flesh. A drawing is reproduced in the documents where it looks like a pencil. The texts indicate that a no period in the history scene would have had the idea of inventing the fork and that this object would have amazed the expeditionaries a lot as they discovered it on Earth. When one has enough energy and when one know how to transmute all the elements of the Mendeleev table, why making storage? The Amit's house has then no cupboards. Its inhabitants do not buy anything. They synthesize on site their everyday consummation products, or receive them through a canalization network, to their alimentation. The authors of the documents say that they prefer to eat natural products, meat or fruits. Those would be delivered at home after having been conditioned through canalization, similar to our pneumatic pipes. Between each meals, one would wash his hands. This means one would change his gloves. The meat food would not be cooked in fat, but prepared with different milks, rich in lipids. They would be coming from the milking of animals, as dolphins and giant bats, which would be equipped with a cerebral implant and would submit willingly to this operation. The clothes would be simple ponchos that one would slip on through the head, with two holes for the arms. The elegance would really be the smallest worry of these people. These sorts of ponchos would have color codes, flecks and geometrical figures which would precise the function of each individual's. Figure 39. The standard clothing. They would be also synthesized and destroyed, the same for beds. There would be no washing machines in these houses. When they work or go on a stony floor, the inhabitant of the planet Amo would pulverize a material on his skin which hardened by itself. Semi-permeable, it would allow the transpiration to get through, stopping the rest. When he comes back home, the Amit worker washes his feet, his shoes would be dissolved, with socks, in the tub. Social structure of this hypothetical Amo planet. It would be totalitarian. In truth, the mental structure of these men, if they exist, seems so different from ours that this organization would not be perceived as a constraint. The species would be gregarious at a very high level. The Amit society looks like a huge human hive. Of course, it would have evolved along the time. But this gregariousness seems to be its major essential character. Actually, the whole population would be under permanent control. The society would live in symbiosis with its technology and a network of 120 computing centers would deal with all activities. The Amit people would have defined basic psychosocial laws considered as reliable enough so that the direction of public affairs and private could be left to the computers. Reading these texts, we have to think to the Brave New World from Aldous Huxley and to the main principle always repeated in this remarkable science fiction story: identity is like stability, our planet is unstable because we are very different from each other's. We find strong cultural differences from a region to another and between the individuals. These differences would be practically non-existing on the Amo planet. Here, the parameters classifying to individuals would be essentially based on their mental and physical capacities, with, by the way, only little differences from an individual to another less emphasized than on Earth. One can't speak of a believing as their ideology would be entirely based on scientific pragmatism. They do not seem to be fitted with an extraordinary imagination. They would then all believe to the same thing, and would all have the same mental schema. None would ask questions, as their society thinks to have brought definitely coherent answers to the essential problems: birth, the role of the humans on the planets, death, and after death. The representation of the universe presented is based on a scientific analysis.